You're listening to The Sports Memory, part of the Sports Moments and Memories podcast with Craig Olson. Make sure to like and subscribe so you never miss a sports memory.
Pemberton Law is one of our sponsors on our podcast, and you can visit them at one of their convenient locations around the region in Fergus Falls, Wadena, Detroit Lakes, and Alexandria, or online at pemlaw.com. Pemberton Law carries a legacy of trustworthy and reputable legal representation dating back to 1883. And when it comes to summer fun on the water, you need look no further than Lake Area Docks and Lifts to help you out. Lake Area Docks and Lifts offers premium waterfront equipment sales, service, and installation. They're your neighbor at the lake, and they serve you from five convenient locations in Lakes Country. Lake Area Docks and Lifts. In 1984, the Fergus Falls boys basketball team qualified for state for the first time since 1957. Back on March 1st of this year, we had six members of the 1984 basketball team join us following an Otter home game at the old Roosevelt Gym. Tab Meyer, Steve Thome, Keith Pearson, Tim Swenson, John Thunsell, and Todd Johnson from that 1984 team shared their memories, and we're going to share some of those memories with you over the next several minutes as we revisit that 1984 season that saw the Otters go 20-4 and get to state for the first time since 1957. It was a special year, and Coach Bob Bjorklund and Coach Steve Atchison are also going to share their memories of that very special season. And let's start there. I asked Coach Bjorklund when he knew this was going to be a special team.
You could tell that they had a lot of basketball savvy in them, and so they had a high basketball IQ, but I think some of the beginnings of that were 2 years earlier, maybe, when we'd come off a pretty nice season in 82 and made some noise in tournament play, and there were some good things happening we could tell in the future of Otter basketball based on how that year went, and then could see on the horizon some really good players that were going to be able to put it together.
They were a very spirited group, and they played with a swagger. Even back then when we were just learning about what swagger was, they came into the gym and it was like, we know who we are, and we're going to be pretty good here tonight.
I think we had high expectations.
But I think the high expectations started a lot longer than the year before that.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about that in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And most teams talk about that.
But you remember, we were the first really generation that came through with the Saturday basketball program.
Yep.
We were kind of the first fruits of that labor.
Yep. And we had some good coaching. Wally helped out early. Mm-hmm. We had good coaches all the way up.
You know, the coaching staff that we got to be a part of, and it certainly was a teamwork kind of a thing. So Atch and I, and then Dave Lurkey was part of that as a volunteer coach, and Roger Olson, of course. And so we were together, the four of us, for a number of years there. But then you look at what we had down in the junior high ranks, too, with Wally Pearson and Pat Hardina. And I suppose Dave Schneck wouldn't have been there then. And I get my years mixed up a little bit here, but Jeff Moon, maybe, mm-hmm. at that time. So you're right. Just the fun coaching staff, and so good to be surrounded by that kind of basketball intelligence and camaraderie.
I don't know if I thought I knew we were going to be good, but Breckenridge used to really give it to us. That was our 10th grade and our 11th grade. They really gave it to us. I mean, we were really gunning for them, Breckenridge. When that year came around, I remember that we wanted that more than anything, because they beat us by quite a bit when we went to the holiday tournament the year before. And we were going in there that year. We were saying, yep, this is what we were really going after. So, and we knew they had strong guards. We knew they could really shoot the ball. So.
And everybody inside was 6'5", 240.
Yeah.
It's amazing, because our junior year, our junior year, we took our lumps. I don't remember what our record was, but yeah, it wasn't great.
We had a lot of close games then.
But we also took some lumps from some teams that were just really better than us and kind of put us in our place. And I think that goes, Craig, to the makeup of the next year, because the next year then, you know, you're adding Keith at the one guard spot and Thomer and the rest of it. It's like the makeup changed from taking our lumps to a group that really just came together, and it was kind of like, it's our time. You know, we've been through the battles. We're prepared for this, and we're going to be okay. And as the season went on and you start winning close games, your confidence level just goes skyrocket, right?
Yeah, you think about that, huh? The blend of players that we had and the skill set that they brought to the table, that is fun to reflect on and really fun to think about. Because, you know, the good shooters, some of our inside guys weren't the best 18, 19, 20-foot shooters, but they sure were accurate from 10, 12 feet. So you're right, with Jonathan selling there as a big presence, and I think he probably led the team in blocks. In fact, I know he did because I looked at the stat sheet.
Yeah, you cheated.
There's a cumulative stat sheet that I looked back in the archives and found it. Anyway, and then like you say, with Steve Thome and Tim Swenson, a pretty big lineup. And then the two Fiested cousins, we called them Major and Minor.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The senior and the junior, Todd Fiested and Mark Fiested. And they had some length to them, too. And the combination of tenacity, and they were edgy at times.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of right on the border of, okay, we've got control of these guys, yeah. But in a good way. It was in a good way because that competitiveness stood out. Yeah, so like you said, the full range of skill set was huge.
I think the hearing the name of Jonathan Sell during this conversation here, I think he came so far his senior year as a big man. And you know, sometimes big kids are a little longer to develop. I can remember in the beginning of the year when John Thunsell got in the game, and it was like, man, he's having a nice couple of minutes and a couple of minutes, and he was getting more and more minutes. And pretty soon, the last few games of the season was like, get the ball into Thunsell. He's on the block, and he's posted up so nice, you know. And it was like, he really was such an addition to that post player in the paint presence. That was a key factor, I think, to getting to the state tournament, just his physical presence and what he could do down in the block, and what kind of a great development season he had.
I remember it just being a year where we eked out a lot of wins, barely. But we, 95% of the time, we were on the winning side of these tight games. We just found a way to get it done. You know, we could run and gun and score 80 points, or we could play a box and one and sit there and do nothing and win 33-31. You know, I mean, you just don't see scores like that anymore. You know,
it's been 40 years, Thomer. I don't remember scoring 80.
Well, I don't know, man. It's been a long time. that maybe was a week with three games involved.
We had a goal, kind of, and we called ourselves family. You know, and we really grew up together playing for so many years prior to that year, and you know, our motto a lot of times was family, and we left huddles saying family and how much it meant to us and how close we were, and just seeing that, how what everybody meant to each other.
I'll play off what Tad was talking about with family. You see it a lot now, and Keith, you've coached a lot of years too. I coached for 25 years at the high school level. And you see a lot of teams run out with family on their stuff. You see a lot of college programs run out with family on their warm-ups. That's really the first time, I think, in 84 that I heard kind of that phrase around a basketball team. And I was telling Coach Birkeland here tonight, I said, I remember our preseason meeting before the season started. And Coach said, this is your family. We are going to spend so much time together in the next 4 months or 5 months, whatever it is, that this is your family more than you're even probably going to see your family at home. And we jokingly, some of us walked out that night, and we were like, you'd walk by each other in the hallways. And I remember doing this, walk by, you know, a teammate in the hallway, and whether it was Keith as a sophomore or the juniors or us seniors, and you started going, hey, bro, hey, bro. And we did it, I think, to start with. It was almost like we were kind of making fun of a little bit of the preseason meeting. in the end, it meant everything to what we were as a group. Like I said, I coached a lot of years, and I have never coached a group that was as close as the 84 group that when I played. And it was part of it, it all started in that meeting.
But family is, it's huge. We've had some great teams in the years I've coached here that weren't very close. And you know how those years ended up. And then you've got years like this one. We did have a lot of talent, but you know, maybe not the most talented team ever, but boy, did we were gritty. Practices were always, you know, Tab and I would go nose to nose, or Lenny and I, or whoever it was. If you were on the yellow or the maroon team, it didn't matter. In practice, we got after it, but then we moved on. And I think that was one big part, too, of getting better the year. We had great competitions going on the floor.
And we usually were in the best shape of the teams that we played. Best condition.
We were just talking about the sweepers.
The sweepers.
Doing the sweepers, putting the towel
I can still
the
see you running the sweepers.
I felt bad for John.
your hamstrings were screaming.
Yep.
So you put a towel around the board, 2x4, and push it for to do an otter. You used to have that was
And the guys with the longest legs, they had the most trouble, of course.
Yeah, usually it was Tab, Lenny, Brian, Keith, Todd. They were all at the baseline laughing and chuckling while Tomer, I, and John, and Mark Fiested, and Todd Fiested were, had the whole length of the floor still to go.
I think John took
that into consideration, though.
John?
It wasn't fair. The little guys that could go fast had to get things done at the same time as the big guys. It wasn't fair.
John would literally take the wax off the floor he was pushing.
Yes. He never did figure that out. You got to lift that a little bit when you're running.
It's hard to lift.
When most of your weight's on it, yes.
Yeah, a little story about those boards. It was, coach would ask us pregame, what are the three goals that we want to set? Yep. So if we didn't meet a goal, then we had to do those sweepers.
That's right.
And it was three. So, I mean, if you didn't, if you had a bad game, which we didn't have too often, that we had to do three.
That's right.
I don't remember that, but I don't think.
I don't think we did three too many times.
But remember the first day of practice every year, the Dirty Dozen?
Oh, yeah.
12 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the Dirty Dozen.
At the end of practice.
But again, I think that went to the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think the togetherness and there was no team we were going to face that was going to be in better shape than we were. You know, fourth quarter came along, we were ready to play. And it was like, okay. If it's tight, and a lot of them were tight, I think we probably all sitting here went into the fourth believing we were going to win every game. And it was we're going to outdo you just physical shape wise.
You remember that we would shoot six hoops for
free throws. Yeah.
And if we didn't make four out of six. That we'd run as a team.
Yeah.
And it taught you not to want to let your teammates down. And there were times when you missed the free throw and everybody had to run because of you. And you heard about it from everybody at some point. And you either got better or you found a new sport to play.
I think the concentration on practicing free throws under game conditions, Bob and coaching staff had two or three really good free throw shooting drills that you had to shoot them when you were tired and you had to have an audience and you had to do them winded and we would run before we do them. And there were three different practice drills that we would do to make them concentrate on their free throws. And I think that paid off for all of the teams that Bob probably was the head coach of. It was just that emphasis on being a good free throw shooter when you're in the heat of the game. So we would do it when they're tired, when they've done running otters.
So after you shot so well against DL, you were 7-for-18 in the next game against Bemidji.
Oh, they were tired out.
Okay.
That kind of blows our theory there after.
Yeah, I thought we were onto something. Yeah.
Wasn't a very good free throw shooter. I remember the one time in a practice that we had to make like 10 in a row. You remember? We had, and I was still here when the gym was closed. Tim stayed with me, and I... and Bjorklund Clinton was on his way out the door. Yeah, you guys can go.
Yeah. practice was, we had good depth, so we had some good practice numbers to go at. So our practices were pretty spirited. And there were many times when practice got pretty intense and it got pretty aggressive in there. And it was like, man, these guys are really after it tonight. And they fed off of that. That just, we liked that environment because it kind of kept them grounded, to not getting too out of the box, to because they knew they were good. But it's like, you got to, so we worked them hard and they responded quite well to that. And some of my fond memories would be, we would be in the locker room getting dressed up at 3:45, and Bob would put lacing up his shoes, and Dave Lurkey and Toso and Mark Toso and myself, and Bob would say, we're going to get after him today. And that was a sign to say, it's okay to yell at him today, and it's okay to chirp at him today and get after him. And we would, and they responded to that with kind of a look, and it was like, we'll show you. And they would respond to that. And the other things that, one of my fondest memories is, Bob would say, we're going to play in practice today. Because we didn't always play in practice because we had good depth and we wanted our players to play. But it would be myself and Bob and Dave Lurkey and Mark Toso. We'd bring a junior on our fifth guy and we'd scrimmage. And then it was, we weren't necessarily coaching anymore. We were playing with them. And boy, there was a lot of competitive going on at that particular time. So practice was spirited. And I think it just carried on to the game then on Tuesday nights or Friday nights. And they had a confidence about them and a spirit about them that was second to none.
But going back to Atch's comment earlier about playing with the guys in practice once in a while,
yeah,
we would talk about, well, you need to guard people like you don't want to be guarded. And when Len Kretschmann was guarding me, or Tab Meyer was guarding me, I would think, oh, I just got a little bit better perspective here of how tough these guys were on the ball and the way that they could defend. So that was a something I didn't want to forget to mention, now, the kind of grit and tenacity that we had on the perimeter, but all around throughout the team.
There's little doubt that those spirited practice sessions had a huge impact on the success the Otters had that season against the competitive schedule they played.
So I think we had a lot of close games, as I think back on it, a lot of close games throughout the year, so that certainly prepared us for tournament action and a good a blend of double-A teams and A teams. I mean, we played some of the best Class A teams in the state in Pelican Rapids and Breckenridge, and then a lot of good double-A opponents too. So back in the two-class system, it was fun to be in the big school deal, you know, when we're playing Moorhead twice a year, of course, like we always did back then, and had good games with them, and Bemidji was good, and, you know, I guess I can't keep repeating or naming teams because I don't know if I can remember the ones that we had the closest games against, but good opponents.
I can remember a game, Bob, one time with that team, we went over to Staples to play in Staples Gym, which is an iconic basketball gym. It's got the bleachers on the one side and the stage behind the bench, and they've got their legendary coach, Lynn Peterson, there, and they got a nice team. And we're in a dandy of a basketball game, and we're holding the ball for the last shot of the game, and it's down there. And once you know, the ball ended up at Tim Swenson's hand, and he's hanging on to it. And it's like, Tim Swenson is like, this is my team, and this is my shot. And he pulled up with a jump shot. You know, he's pounding, and he puts up a line drive jump shot from about 18 feet, and it just went boom, line drive, and went boom, nothing but the back of the net. I can remember Swenny running out the gym like this, right out of Staples. The place went nuts. Mm-hmm. It was like we won by two, I think. Or one by one, or two or one that game. And it was like, that was a game. It was like, it was just an absolute barn burner of a game against Staples, which were, again, a class A school. But, man, it was ball game city over at Staples.
We had some great matchups with Staples through the years.
Goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for pulling up that memory. Because I don't know if I would have recalled it with that same precision you just did, but that was fun.
It was always one of the highlights of that team for me. It was like, man, I remember that game like it happened yesterday.
I do remember coming back from, we talked before the cameras were on a little bit about Pelican Rapids and how disappointed we were as a crew that we lost to a smaller town just up the road. And little did we know how good they were. And thinking back how good we, you know, became as that year progressed as well, too. But I think that was a good loss for us early on. just because it put us back into perspective that we need to dig our heels in here and get after it.
You know, the Pelican game, I agree. We came home. It was kind of a gut punch because we thought we were really good. And you go over to Pelican Rapids, and obviously you're the big brother, you know, city-wise, and you get beat. And even though Pelican was a state title winner that year, game one, you got beat. But then we started winning close games, and you start building that confidence level. And each game that goes by, you feel a little bit more like you're invincible in a way. If it gets to the fourth quarter, we're not going to lose. I mean, I think that just builds during the season, too. I think we had that feeling a little bit, but I think those early games in 84 set the tone for later on.
One of the things that made the Otters tough to beat was their defense.
I think it started with man-to-man concepts, too. Everybody, yep. You know, that it started with that and then learned the zones and stuff, too. But really, the man-to-man is what I remember being the kind of the baseline of what we were taught. Mm-hmm. And I think that paid off.
We were such a deep team
yeah.
that we could play man-to-man and not get tired because we had so many players, people coming in yeah. and resting. So that was a big part of why we could play that way is because we had plenty of people coming off the bench that we could switch on. And we played a lot of intense defense. And coach, that's where his background seemed to come from because most of our drills were all about defense. It wasn't as many offensive drills as it was defensive drills. To get in shape, it was all based on defense.
I think it goes back to, again, Keith said it earlier, practices were battles. Because of our depth, every day you went up against a guy that was going to make you better, no matter if you were maroon or gold. You were going to get better, and because of those battles inside, and I agree with what John said. I think teams that zone and their zones aren't very good, it's because they don't know how to play man. You can't be a good zone team until you know how to play man-to-man principles. Mm-hmm. And we practice man a lot. We practice a lot of defensive stuff. And again, every day was a battle. And because of that, we could go out of man and mix up some stuff, but we still had those principles. And I think teams that don't play great defense, you can go hide it with whatever you want to play. But if you don't play good man, nothing you play is going to be really effective. And we got after it every day defensively.
I think that we have a lot of kids that the team was very smart, basketball-wise, because we could change on the fly. You could pull out the 2-3 zone, the man-to-man, put out the diamond press. Coaches tell you what to do. It was there. We didn't have to have timeouts. And everybody knew what they were doing. It didn't matter who was on the floor. You knew where you were going to be. We could switch between defenses and mix people up pretty good too.
It's just amazing how you watch sometimes the game and you will see the 7 or 8 kids that play. And in your head, you walk out of the gym and you go, oh man, 24 was really good tonight. Well, 24 was good because of the guy on the bench that guards him all week long and makes him better. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to depth. It goes back to how close we were as a group. And preparation, but it's making us better every day in practice so we could go out and run that defense.
And speaking of defense, assistant coach Roger Olson came up with a whole new defensive strategy for the big region championship game against St. Cloud Tech.
The first time in a long time we're going to have a chance to play to the state tournament. And so we had a week to prepare, but Roger Olson went out and did the scouting yeah. of the Tech team for their semifinal game, and he came back with a full scouting report on, I watched them play, and I think we need to do this in practice. And that's what came back with that diamond and two zone defense that we came out and had never played it during the course of the entire season. We were basically a man-to-man team. We'd throw in a 1-3-1 zone once in a while to shake it up, but all of a sudden we're doing this different defense. They've never scouted us. No one's ever seen it, and it was a Roger Olson special. And that diamond diamond and two zone, I think, Bob, really was a point of difference. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, for sure. And it was like you only have a couple days to prepare, right?
Yeah.
Didn't have a long time to think about what's the game plan going to be. So I remember sitting thinking, are we sure? Well, Roger's pretty darn sure. And so I think that gave me and the rest of us some confidence. This is a smart move. And and we're going to go with it. But I got to correct you. If you got a diamond in two, that's six guys. You can't play with six. You got to go triangle. So
that's what it was. Thank you. It was a triangle. You can tell I'm getting aged. My elderly is.
You can only have five guys out there.
Good point on that. It was a triangle, and they're all equal sides too. So it was the correct triangle and two. So I just wanted to call it the Raj and Olson defense, and that's kind of what I've talked about with people for years. So yeah, it was Roger Olson's defense that we put in there, as different as it was, and it was great.
It caught him off guard. It was just so unexpected, and so having the lead throughout the whole game before they tied it, in the last minute and a half there.
I got a point on that. We're standing at St. Cloud at Hollenbeck Hall, and we're about ready to start the game, and we're all kind of quiet, and Roger's standing right next to me. He goes, "Well, I actually said I sure hope that defense works." I looked at Roger and said, "I sure hope it does too, Roger." And they were about ready to throw the ball up, So, and it did for really the first quarter, don't you think, Bob?
They were more than that.
They were out of whack. Tech was out of whack because they were talented, and they didn't know where to move or how to penetrate. And I just think for at least the first, until halftime, they were buffooned on what was going on.
Yeah. And we had the right guys in the triangle that were – able to cover a lot of ground, and and then we had the Skerich brothers covered pretty tight with the two man-to-man guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We were taught how to play man-to-man D, and so you took those man principles and you put it in the triangle, because in the triangle in two against Tech, Skerich and Rengel were going to be manned up. So it's not like we were all playing zone. These guys, the guards, chased two really good wing shooters all night long. So their man principles. And if the three of us were sitting in the triangle, you still had to play man principles. You had to talk, communication was key. We had to know where the other cutters were, because obviously we trusted that these guys were going to shut down their two shooters. It was up to us to handle the lane. And again, the size helped, but it comes back to those man principles. And then the coaching staff, from Coach Olson scouting it, Coach Bjorklund and Coach Atchison and Coach Lurkey putting it in, like you say, in 3-4 days. It goes to the depth of our ball club again, because you had to have someone run their offense against us to have us get a look at what we're going to do defensively.
Well, let's have Coach Bjorklund and the team walk us through the last few exciting seconds of that St. Cloud Tech game.
Well, I think back to that game, and we might be part of the reason that they put the shot clock into high school basketball, because we held it for a long time.
Yeah, we did.
I don't know if it was more than a minute or not, but it's somewhere in that range of about a minute. And, of course, it gets down to 45 seconds or so when you think, well, for sure now we're going to hold this thing for the last shot. And whenever the timeout was called, if it was at that 15-second range, it was kind of like, we're in pretty good shape here, because they had put some good pressure on in the preceding 30, 40 seconds. And so we had to be pretty careful and good with the basketball. And, the play – if you want to call it that, it was more a scheme of how and when can we get the ball to Swenny. And, where if it was out front or if it was on the side, it didn't really matter. But wanted him taking the last shot.
Yeah, we did. He was going to take it.
Yeah.
And it banked in, if I remember. Did he call window on that? Did he call bank?
It was from the side. No, exactly. But you're saying it caught a little glass in the way?
I think it hit the backboard and banked in, if I recall the play. And I'm sure Swenny, and if you ask Swenny to this day, I'm sure he called bank. He called board.
Okay.
So I stand on that.
Certainly one of the more iconic shots in Fergus Falls basketball history, and one that I'll never forget.
The St. Cloud State game was one of my best memories, or the loudest memory that I remember ever, of the gym being playing and just being memorized by how loud it was when they tied the game when it got close. And I'll never forget that feeling at that point, how loud it was in the gym, and just like, wow, it was, we're there now, because everybody was really into that game. So that was a memory that I know I'll never forget.
In the huddle, what I remember, and again, 40 years is a long time, but in the huddle, I don't remember a play being set and called.
I can agree with that.
Of all, the crowd was absolutely as loud as I'd ever heard anything in that gym that night. And we're in the huddle, and I think my only thought while Coach Bierklund was talking. I think he said they're coming out in their zone because they had zoned us pretty much all night.
Yep.
We're going to go into our 2-1-2 set, and we're going to work the ball, and we're going to take what the best shot is. My whole thought was, and I think coaches and probably all of us sitting in the huddle, was the game is not going to be lost in regulation. We're either winning it, which I think we all thought we would, mm-hmm. or it's going to overtime. It's not. We're not losing it. It will mm-hmm. be the last shot, and then we'll take it from there. But I don't remember a set play being called.
I don't either.
And again, I think that goes to Coach Bierklund knowing the group he had. We took the floor and we moved the ball around, and you know, it ended up in my hands, but I think it could have ended up in any of these guys' hands. I think we'd have won in the end, no matter who had the ball.
That win over St. Cloud Tech sent the Otters to state, and it brought the community together behind their Otters.
The community people wanted tickets, and they wanted to talk basketball. They just wanted to talk about the season, the championship game against Tech, what's it going to be like at the state tournament, at the big show. And so the community was really talking about it. But in school, you know, they did a send-off pep fest for us, and the place was packed. And it was quite an experience. It was just fantastic for our kids, I think, and for our community, too. It was just open the door.
Yeah, you think about all the ingredients that make for something really, really fun and special, and it's the team, of course, but there was such great community support. We came back from St. Cloud and Hallenbeck Hall that night and
right.
came back to the gym here after that section championship, and the place is packed.
Yeah.
At least one side is packed.
Yeah, it was packed.
Yeah.
And I get goosebumps kind of thinking about that, the way that the community rallied around it. So we had such a great group of cheerleaders and band and the parent group, and just a lot of those ingredients were over the top great and followed us down to Williams Arena.
When we got home from Tech, and we talked about this a little bit tonight, when we got home from Tech and they got us into the locker room, kind of without people seeing us,
mm-hmm.
and then the chant started, "We want the Otters," and walking out, you know, and I've said this in all the years coaching too, if you could bottle that, mm-hmm. which I get chills still just talking like this now. If you could bottle that feeling and give that little bottle to every kid you coach, to every one of your players tonight, if you could give that little bottle, you'll make a run.
Mm-hmm.
Because that feeling is something that no one can take away from us sitting here. It was amazing. And then, like you say, the pep rally and getting on the bus. And Thomer, you talked about it. What song still sticks in your head?
Jump by Van Halen.
Jump by Van Halen. I remember getting on the bus. And we played that song, and we were sitting there, and I know I couldn't jump back then. I still can't. But yet, that was the song we were listening to get ready in 84 to go to the state tournament.
A busload of Otters listening to the song Jump by Van Halen arrive at the big show, where they find out they are up against the top-ranked team in Minnesota, Minneapolis North.
I remember in pregame warm-up, I was talking with our departed teammate, Scott Groen, who we missed dearly, and he was a big part of our success the whole year and at St. Cloud as well. But I'd just done a layup or something. I came back, and I was standing behind Scott, and Scott's not getting ready to get a rebound. He's looking at the other team. And he says to me, "Do you realize, like, almost everybody's dunking the ball over there?"
I
said, "No, I didn't realize that." So I turned and looked, and yeah, I mean, they had a lot of guys that could dunk. I mean, it was a pretty impressive team. I was excited to play on Williams Arena floor, and you know, I could jump pretty well on any floor, but on Williams Arena, it was literally like a trampoline. I mean, I felt like I could fly when I was out there before the game started, and so I was not intimidated. And I was excited to play, you know, the number one team in the state. And, you know, they were a heck of a team, but we gave them everything we could. You know, we threw everything at them, and for three quarters we were tied with them, you know. And, you know, we ran out of time, I think.
We had some good lateral quickness out front. So up against North, it was put to a big test, that's for sure. I didn't feel that quick that day. I knew that.
And you know, all you want when you get to a tournament something like that is to play hard and to be healthy. Unfortunately, you are not healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right. That was a bummer to have Tim Swenson down with the flu there and whatever kind of bug he had. And so you get up that morning, and how are you going to be feeling here today? And then you get that news and go, okay, this is not what we were expecting to be here, is less than full strength. Mm-hmm. We played a dynamite game against Minneapolis North. We played them tough. Mm-hmm. And they had some kids that went on to play Division I basketball. Brett McNeil, Bronson McNeil, two brothers. Mm-hmm. Kid named Carter. I got a funny story about Carter because, you know, we're playing at Williams Arena, right? So it's an elevated floor, and I think for the most part of the game I stayed down where, you know, where the team was. But a couple times I'm up on the elevated floor, and I yelled out at the ref, "The last time we shot a free throw, this guy went in early and got the offensive rebound." Yeah. Or number 25, whatever it was. He turns around, smiles at me, and goes, yeah. So anyway, Steve Thome had a great game and played tough, but we came out on the short end.
Yeah, defensively in that game, we played really solid defense that game. It was a battle on the boards, and we were competing there. I remember North was quick to jump and could really extend into the offensive board area, but it was real tough and physical in there. We played them tough. We just had a hard time scoring the ball. And when your leader, Tim Swenson's not your scorer, that guys are looking to say, who's going to get the shot, who can take that shot, who wants that shot, and Tim Swenson's not feeling himself, that hurt. And that's what happens sometimes, you know. But otherwise, overall, that team really gave it everything that game.
One of the toughest things to do after you lose that first round game, you got to come back and play another game the next day, and both teams are in the same boat, obviously. But how hard is that to get guys, you know, up and ready and motivated and ready to go?
Yeah, it's what you preach all the time, right? You gotta flush it and you gotta move on. Maybe a better word is you got to park it.
Yeah.
Because you can't flush it. You're never going to forget some of the disappointment that maybe you just went through. But you got to park it, and you got to move on, and it's tough. And it's not just tough for the players. It's tough for us as a coaching staff, too. And so we got to all be in this thing together. And, okay, we're going to be playing again tomorrow morning, and we're going to be playing a good team, no doubt about that. So.
That was hard. I remember it being an early game.
Yeah, it was an 8 a.m. game.
8 a.m. St. Paul. That was hard.
And I don't know what the teams have done at state tournaments since then, but back when we stayed at downtown St. Paul in the hotel rooms, it was four boys to a room. Two boys to each double bed. And if you think that's an easy night of sleep, not so much fun.
No, at 8 o'clock, imagine we're up there.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah.
5:36.
Yeah.
It was such a disappointment, and then to turn around that and then turn around that fast.
Before you know it, we're out.
Yeah. They had a tough.
North Branch.
They had a tough big guy.
Yeah. 6'10".
Yeah. 6'10", yeah.
I won the opening jump. I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that too.
I was going to beat him at it.
And that floor wasn't that good either.
No, that was about as bad a floor as Williams Arena was.
Where was that at?
No, St. Paul Civic Center.
Yeah. It's one of those floors they pieced together, and there was
and there's nothing really behind the basket either. Behind the basket for years.
It was tough to shoot.
Yeah.
We never talked about really winning at practice. It was like, you better work hard at practice today. And like how, coach? And that would be the practice that the intensity would kick up and they'd be ready for Friday night. But we didn't say, hey, we're proud of how many wins we had. It's like, well, we're really proud of this practice today. You're ready for Friday night. And that's about all.
That's interesting, isn't it? The winning takes care of itself, and here we're going to do the things that we know we can do and do them right, and whatever happens, and winning will take care of itself.
Yeah, we talked very little about how many wins, what our record was. Yeah. We talked a lot about how we practiced that day. How'd it go? They were intense practices.
Yeah. See, when you do your due diligence at the end of the year, you get 20 wins. Yeah, it's good deal. Well, 40 years later, You're back in the gym here, the old Roosevelt gym. The Otters are starting to use this a little more. And talk about
fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. Play there more. Be there often.
Yeah, talk about this place. I mean, this playing in this gym.
Oh, man, does that bring out memories, yeah. Right? Just so many, many fond memories that go beyond even the winter, because we would do summer camps here with the youngsters, and the backcourt club was
active. Remember Summer League in here?
Oh, Potter, man.
And Blazers in here, and you and I and Denny Hansen. And it was Summer League, and the kids would come in here and play just as hard in the summer when it was 90 degrees in here. And then some of the – from there. So keep going, Bob. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
it was nuts in here in the summer.
Well, you were a legend in the summertime for being a one-man reffing crew there, because we would ref those Summer League games, and oftentimes it was one guy reffing both – or reffing the game,
one
not
game.
Two. Yep. Yeah, not reffing two games.
No, one game.
One game.
Whole court.
Oh, man, the memories of this place, yeah. They just kind of flood my spirit and my soul, and it's not just what the scoreboard says at the end of it. It's just kind of the grittiness of practice and the bonding together that comes with being, you know, on a team, and all the things you'd like to say are so valuable about sports go way, way beyond the winning and losing, and just the life lessons that can be learned from that. And so it's pretty special, yeah.
Is there anything like the We Want the Otters when you're down waiting to come out? You hear the crowd and the pep band.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, man, we can both picture it when our kids were just youngsters.
Oh, yeah.
Being around the team and stuff. And I've got this memory of, you know, my son and daughter and your kids kind of standing in that entryway as the team's coming out. And and that says something, too, right there. When you've got players that you want your kids to be around, you know that's good stuff, because you're interested in having them, you know, rub shoulders with them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
40 years goes too fast.
No kidding.
Well, that's sprinted by. That's sprinted by. Hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
We pick an all-tournament team or an all-opponent team.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can remember, but do you have any idea who the five people were on our all-opponent team?
In 84?
In 84, which five guys do you think the players voted on to be a part of our all-opponent team?
That's a really good... A kid from Moorhead, maybe Quinnett being on the team?
Somebody from
Steve
Moorhead.
Steve Quinnett
from Moorhead. Yeah.
He's very good.
One for one.
There's probably a kid from Staples on that team.
I don't think so.
There's got to be a kid from Pelican Rapids named Westby on that team.
There you go.
I would say Pat Westby was probably on that list.
Westby.
From Pelican.
There's got to be a kid from Breckenridge on that team.
I don't.
And you can see that as I'm in my upper 60s now, my memory's not where it needs to be. But I got a couple of them on there. Finish the rest of it.
I'm not sure I can finish it, but I know that Skerich was on there, Sam Skerich, the senior from St. Cloud Tech. And then one of the McNeils, I think it was Brett McNeil.
Oh, sure.
Brett McNeil from North. And then I do know the last one. It was a Bemidji kid named Lion Decker.
Oh. Yep. As you say the name, it's like, oh yeah, that kid. That kid.
Anyway, not that that's important, I guess, for what we're talking about here, but just kind of interesting, because the players at the end of the year would kind of look back at the season and say, okay, we'll vote on some guys.
Good stuff. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having
Enjoy
us.
The night.
Hey.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Is right.
Awesome. I'm on the air in 5 minutes.
You're on in 5 minutes.
I did see a glance down there.
Yeah, these guys are rambling here. We're just rambling.
Oh, it's great. Oh,
would
man,
you guys quit being so long-winded?
Pemberton Law is one of our sponsors on our podcast, and you can visit them at one of their convenient locations around the region in Fergus Falls, Wadena, Detroit Lakes, and Alexandria, or online at pemlaw.com. Pemberton Law carries a legacy of trustworthy and reputable legal representation dating back to 1883. And when it comes to summer fun on the water, you need look no further than Lake Area Docks and Lifts to help you out. Lake Area Docks and Lifts offers premium waterfront equipment sales, service, and installation. They're your neighbor at the lake, and they serve you from five convenient locations in Lakes Country. Lake Area Docks and Lifts.